It is funny that you can listen back and be like, yeah, I this is definitely different than the week before when they recorded at 9 a.m. versus 3 p.m. That's funny.
Hello and welcome to the Android Police Podcast. My name is Daniel Bader. This week on the show, there are now three Pixel 9s coming out later this year, we think. We'll talk all about the Pixel 9 Pro XL, if that's what it's going to be called, which I'm not sure about that name, but we'll see. Disney Plus and Hulu have finally officially brought their worlds together. You can now watch Hulu content inside the Disney Plus app. It's just a tile, but it's there, and we love it. There is a bit of an interesting news story about the Pixel 8 and Gemini, which we will go into a little bit later. I'm very excited to hear Will's take on this. And there's a bunch of big stories this week about AI, about the social media harms in children, and there's a funny story about the Vision Pro that we might get to at the end. So this is a fun, kind of a grab bag show this week, but our best shows always are. So, Will,
yes.
Welcome.
Thank you. Yeah, no, it's big leading up into a holiday weekend energy, I think, is where we're at.
Yeah, we're actually recording this on a Thursday because we're off tomorrow, recording in the morning. So see if you can hear any differences in our energy levels.
I think it'll be higher. I'm still drinking coffee as we record.
Yeah, me so too. Like, I'm just finishing the dregs of my coffee, but it's still working. It's still hitting me.
Absolutely.
And I don't know about you, but that first like glass of water you drink after you have your morning coffee,
yeah,
is the best glass of water you'll drink all day.
Yeah, I should drink more water is what I'm hearing from this
state. You should absolutely drink more water. Okay, so let's talk Pixel 9.
Yeah.
This has been kind of an ongoing rumor for a while, and we saw an earlier leak that we weren't really sure, is this the smaller Pixel 9? Was it the Pixel 9 Pro? Were there two kind of premium pros that were coming in different sizes? It turns out it's the latter. This OnLeaks leak, its render, gives us a bit more information, including sizing. What it does say is there are going to be three Pixel 9s this year. A regular Pixel 9, a Pixel 9 Pro that's, I think, slightly larger than the Pixel 9.
It would be screen size-wise, but the leaked dimensions are identical between the two phones.
Okay, so just slimmer bezels.
Slimmer bezels, yeah.
And then a larger Pixel 9 Pro XL.
Yeah, I don't know if that name
which I really
is
hope
official.
Or yeah, I really just hope that's not what it's called.
Yeah, I think that might just be what we've all decided to call it, because that's mixing the Pro name with the former big Pixel code name, right? Like mixing the two together. It is somehow more clunky. It is more clunky. It is somehow clunkier than iPhone 15 Pro Max, which I didn't think was possible because I find Pro Max to be incredibly clunky.
There hasn't been an XL Pixel since the Pixel 4 XL.
Right. Can I?
Because they, no, go for it.
Here's what I think they should do. I think it's the most obvious strategy. Pixel 9 Ultra. Let's do it. Let's use the Ultra word. Let's get it out
just
there.
Own it.
Let's own it. Let's finally make a Pixel Ultra. I think it would be funny. I don't know if Google would find it funny, but it's been long enough. And I don't know. Like, I also think it seems like people really like buying things that are called Pro and Ultra.
I hate Ultra.
Yeah, it's bad.
I hate it. It's so bad. It's way worse than, actually, I don't know. I'm like correcting myself mid-sentence. I don't know if it's worse than Pro Max.
It's not.
But there's just something about Ultra that's very childish to me, you know?
What,
it's like superhero adjective. Like, it just feels, it just doesn't feel like it should belong to a piece of technology.
What should we call the big Pixel 9 Pro? Like, in your world, if you were naming it, what would you name?
The very big Pixel 9 Pro.
Pixel 9 Pro, parentheses, really big.
Yeah, the really big Pixel 9 Pro. The good one. It's just like, that's, for me, it's just like, I just want descriptors. I want something that's actually useful to people. The one with the better camera, you know?
Sure. I mean, they could name it Pixel 9 Pro parentheses 6.2 inches and Pixel 9 Pro parentheses 6.7 inches.
I wouldn't be surprised if Google like SEOs its own phone.
Yeah.
Or un-SEOs its own phone. I don't know. It doesn't really matter, to be honest. It's just interesting that I think like we forget that Samsung and Apple come out with 3 to 4 flagships a year.
Right.
Like it's so normal now that we forget that it's actually quite a large number and Google doesn't. And this makes sense. It's just interesting that it's, you know, it's not like they're making a smaller Pro.
Right.
Right.
Well, I mean, the Pixel 9 Pro would be 6.2 inch. It would be a smaller Pro than what we have now.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I messed that up. That doesn't make sense. I had this brain fart for a second, and
okay, like genuinely though, it is going to be a little difficult to keep track of this because, and this is my big thing, and I want to try to find time to write about it today before I'm off for 3 days, but this is another year, and I think based on this leaked roadmap that I'll talk about in a second, I think this will fix itself next year, but this is another year where I'm looking at Pixel rumors, and if you remember last year, I was the same way with the 7A. Where I don't understand Google's strategy here, and I think the roadmap is all kind of screwed up. So in December of 2022, we get this leaked roadmap that goes through the Pixel 10 in 2025. We're obviously not there yet. Pretty much everything on that roadmap has come to pass. I think the pricing on the Pixel 7a was wrong, and everything else has been more or less right. And one of the things on there was in 2024, we will get 3 Pixel 9s. There will be a regular Pixel 9 that is a successor to the Pixel 8. And then a smaller and a larger Pixel 9 Pro, right? And so that's what we're seeing with these leaks. It's all lining up. So my question comes from, if the Pixel 8a gets a price hike to $550 as is rumored, right? Even if it's at $500. And let's say the Pixel 9 Pro, by which I mean the 6.2 inch Pixel 9 Pro, is at $800. Where between $550 and $800 are we landing this normal Pixel 9? It just feels, and I know this that launch is like, 5 months apart from each other, right? We're expecting the Pixel 8a at I/O, the Pixel 9 in October. We're also probably going to still have the Pixel 7a on sale for an even cheaper price. I'm just like confused on where Google intends to place this middle child Pixel 9. If the Pixel 8a was cheaper, it would make more sense to me, but like the jump from 550 to I guess 650 or 700 up to 800, like so let's say 700. So we're going to go 550, 700, 800 for 3 phones. I'm ignoring the big Pixel 9 Pro. Let's just focus on those 3. 3 fairly similar phones over a $250 range just feels like very confusing. And I'm, as you said, Samsung specifically does this. They flood the market with a phone at like every $50 bracket. Although I think they're trying to do better with it this year, which is why the A55 isn't in the States. I'm still confused over what do you point at someone to buy? Is it really just like, well, you have a budget of $550, so you get this one. You have a budget of $700, so you get this one. Like, I don't know. I find it confusing in my head. And the reason I say it'll be fixed next year, before we talk about that, is that the 8A is the last A series device on that roadmap. It was only, according to that roadmap, was only going to happen if the 7A sold well. The A series is like far and away Google's like hit success as far as their phones go. I guess they're going to kill it effectively. And then either older Pixels or this lower cost Pixel 9 / Pixel 10 next year will take its place. But then we're killing the most successful aspect of the Pixel lineup. I don't know. I find the whole thing confusing.
So I think they'll increase the price of everything this year. I don't think if they're increasing the price of the 8A, they will keep the 9 and the 9 Pro and the 9 Big Pro the same. I think what'll end up happening is we'll probably go to $750 for the 9, maybe $999 for the Pro, and then like $1099 for the Pro XL.
Wow.
Which would,
those are huge,
I think, put it in. Yeah, well, I mean, it would put it more in line with Apple and Samsung, right?
Yeah, that's true. It's just, like, does Google have the foothold in the market to, like, demand those prices, I guess, is my question.
So, I don't think that's the question here, right? Like, it's about, Google is, what, in, like, the seventh year, eighth, however many years
eighth for Pixel, 2016 was the first Pixel
of its Pixel cycle, right? And I think at this point you basically have to compare Pixel products to previous Pixel products in terms of pricing, okay. Right? I don't think, like, obviously Google is competing with Apple and Samsung and other companies, but there's no opportunity anymore for them to release a cheaper product in hopes that it will convert people. There's just no more, like, people, I think, have made up their mind for the most part, and they don't mind paying an extra $100 or $200 if they perceive the value to be there. And Google, I think, has to prove that its premium phones can compete at the same level as the Apple and Samsung counterparts, right? I agree that it's not going to help them grow a huge number of buyers if the price is higher. But I think from a healthy business perspective, they would much rather have a higher margin on a smaller number of units that can then stand up to scrutiny in a way that they really haven't been able to for the previous few years. I mean, maybe a little bit with the Pixel 8, but, like, even you had QC issues with a bunch of Pixels.
That's exactly where I was going to go next, is has Google earned... I feel like since the switch to Tensor, a lot of the conversation around the Pixel has been like, yes, there are some issues with it. Even Tensor G3, I would say, is not as efficient or runs as cool as current Qualcomm chips. But, like, the trade-off is that you usually pay less money, especially if you're buying A-series, but in general, you pay less money, right? Like, the top-of-the-line Pixel 8 Pro is $1,000, and that, well, I guess you could argue compares closer to the S23 Plus, which is also, or S24 Plus, excuse me, which is also $1,000, but, like, the Ultra is $1,300, right? So if you compare those two, you're saving $300. I just wonder if Google built confidence in its brand to the point where they can start asking for $1,100, $1,200 for a smartphone over not the iPhone, because I think when you say people are not going to convert, I think you're talking about Apple buyers. iPhone owners are not going to switch over to Pixel. Although I'd argue that's the brand they would be the most likely to switch over to. But Samsung owners are the ones who would be more likely, because you're moving Android to Android. It's not the most challenging hurdles in the world to jump over. And so I wonder if you're looking at a $1,200 Pixel 9 Pro XL compared to a $1,300 S24 Ultra or even S25 Ultra a couple months later, if people look at that and go, like, Samsung has a more trusted quality control, basically.
Yeah. Well, it's not even about that, I think. I think people talk mostly about Apple and Samsung in the same breath, right? The Pixel is just sort of in its own world. I think the audience for the Pixel is a little bit more niche. It's loyal in like a really poisonous way, you know? And still, I think it affects people emotionally more than any other phone in the world, I would say, because Apple and Samsung, their install base is so big, it's spilled over into the mainstream. And I think the phones that those companies produce now are sort of reflecting that audience and that homogeneity, if you will. And I think the Pixel is still the only phone brand where it's not big enough yet that Google can kowtow to the masses, but it's also a phone that I think gives the masses the best Android experience. So it accidentally is the best mass market Android phone, but it's still nerdy enough and interesting enough from a technical perspective that loyal kind of old Nexus users still think that it's their best option too. And I guess my question is there enough price tolerance at this point where people who want the best Pixel experience are willing to pay for it? And I think that came up this past year with the iPhone 15 Pro Max, right? It was yet another year where Apple gave the larger phone a better camera. They didn't do it with the 14, but they did it with the 13. You're paying more for it, but a lot of people are like, if I'm going to get the best iPhone, that means I need to get the biggest iPhone. And a lot of people are hoping that Google does this thing where they just give the two best Pixels the exact same spec sheet, and the only difference is screen size and battery. The cameras are identical. Right?
I'm one of those people hoping.
I hope so too, because I don't necessarily want an XL.
Right.
I think the Pixel 8 Pro size is perfect.
The Pixel 8 Pro size or the Pixel 8 size?
Well, so is the Pixel 9 XL going to be the same size as the Pixel 8 Pro?
So the Pixel 9 Pro XL would be the same size as the Pixel 8 Pro, and the Pixel 9 Pro would be the same size as the Pixel 8.
Oh.
Isn't this a fun conversation we get to have for the next 10 months?
Well, it's not 10 months. It's like 6 months.
Yeah, but we're going to do comparisons or whatever. You're right. It's like 7 months.
I mean, you're probably right that I'm just kind of...
It's tough because like usually you line up the two, but now if you say Pixel 9 Pro, you're talking about the successor to the Pixel... Well, you're talking about the successor to both phones, but like it's a Pixel 8 size. But it's been 3 years, right? It's been since 2021 of thinking of the Pixel X Pro as the big one. So it screws everything up.
Right. Okay. So either way, like it's... So the Pixel 9 Pro real big is going to be the same size as the Pixel 8 Pro, which is fine. It's a good size. I don't mind that. Then I do wonder, actually, now that I'm thinking critically about this and I understand it, I don't know why the Pixel 9 Pro small version exists, personally. I think we've talked about small phones.
It's for the people who wrote the piece on small phones 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, I get it. But like, okay, sure. I don't think that's what people really want. I think people would want a bigger phone and then the biggest phone.
We've talked about that best-selling smartphones chart, right? Like a couple times now from 2023, and like both the 14 Pro and the 15 Pro, which are roughly the same size as the Pixel 8 in this small Pixel 9 Pro, theoretically, like they're on this chart. It's the big cheap one that doesn't make it. It's the iPhone 14 Plus and iPhone 15 Plus that don't make it. So like, I do think, but again, Apple is kind of its own beast, so maybe that's hard to count. I don't know. Maybe they do one generation of this. They realize no one except for me bought the Pixel 9 Pro small version, and they move on. And by the way, before I forget, not to go back to the naming thing, but I think we've cracked it. I think it should be like Taylor's version, and it should be parentheses small version and parentheses big version.
Yes. Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, if Swifties can buy a bunch of Pixels this year, exactly, then Google will be saved and Rick Osterloh will get a promotion. So
exactly,
maybe we can make it happen for them. I don't know. I just don't think it makes sense for them to release a slightly like the Pixel 9 Pro, the same size as the Pixel 8,
yeah,
or slightly bigger, whatever. And then the regular, like the XL becomes, I don't know. It just, that to me makes no sense. I think if they're going to release an XL, make it a bit bigger and actually have it differentiated from the previous version.
Well, that would probably be the smart move, would be to make the Pixel 9 Pro parentheses small version closer to like 6.3 inches, 6.4 inches, right? Like kind of in that middle space, and then have the Pixel 9 Pro parentheses big version be like S24 ultra sized, like 6.8, you know, huge display.
Yes.
And maybe they go that way with the Pixel 10. We don't know. But yeah, I could see that. Now, I don't want it, to be very clear. I want the 6.2-inch Pixel 9 Pro, but in terms of what the market wants. And I mean, we're seeing that, like, there was a report not that long ago that, like, the S25, the small S25 will move up to, like, 6.3 or 6.4 inches, I think, and not 6.2 inches, which is what it is this year. So, like, the direction is headed there. I'm curious to see what Apple does, too. Again, I don't want it. Personally, if I was running Google, they'd be sub 6-inch phones, but I'm not. So,
well, that's probably a good thing because your phone
I think
business
I would do
would
a
go bankrupt.
Damn good job
in
running Google.
Less than a year.
I would. I think I'd crush it.
There's a nothing joke in here somewhere. Give Will nothing, and he'll run it into the ground. Okay, so. I don't know. This is very, very stupid, as all Pixel things are, and yet everybody will eat up every leaf. Absolutely. Until the day that it's announced, because as well, it's a Pixel phone, and the synergy here, the way that we obsess about Pixels more than any other brand, and as well criticize them, is because we love them. It's like a tough love approach that we've had since the days of the Nexus One, and I remember having those same feelings, right? Like when the Nexus One came out, I was one of the first buyers. Then I bought the Nexus S and I was so happy because it was made by Samsung and the screen was so much better. Yeah. And then you found all these issues with it. And then, you know, it was just like one thing after another, after another. Every single year we would just pour our hearts and souls into these devices. And for some reason, Google is the only company that's still maintaining that energy.
Yeah.
It's wild to me.
That's an interesting, I hadn't thought about that, but like we do, and not just tech press, not just enthusiast press or whatever you want to call it, but also just like Redditors, right? Like regular, not regular, but like kind of nerdy consumers, people who obsess over this stuff, like really do dig into everything good and bad about Pixel more than they do Samsung or OnePlus or whatever. And I think a lot of times you'll see people be like, why are you obsessing over X bug on the Pixel? Like Samsung has bugs too. And I hadn't thought about the fact that it is mostly just like, there is some enthusiast flame still lit in my heart that is like, well, it's out of love. Like it's tough to recommend the Pixel 8 because I don't know what experience you're going to have. It's not out of malice. It's out of me wanting to be like, I want to love this thing and recommend it wholeheartedly and be like, everyone should go buy this. I don't care what phone you have now. This is the one to get.
Because the highs are so high.
Yes.
And the lows are so, so low.
Yeah. And it's in a way that is difficult to recommend because it's like, I don't know. So we were talking about this. Taylor and I were talking about this with Manuel on a call like a week or two ago, maybe 2 weeks ago. Manuel was like, yeah, I get like 6 or 7 hours of battery out of my Pixel 8, the regular Pixel 8. And I had just switched to the regular Pixel 8. Taylor's been using it since launch. And both of us were like, we're lucky to get 3 to 4 hours of battery life out of it. And I switched away from the Pixel 8 to that Motorola phone we talked about last week. I switched back and the March feature drop was waiting for me. I installed it and I'm now getting like five and a half hours of screen on top. Like the battery life, the standby time, noticeably better after the March feature drop. I don't know why. I don't think that was one of the things that was like, it just, whatever was going on in the, I didn't uninstall apps, right? Like I didn't change anything. I just updated the phone and now I'm getting like 20% better battery life out of it.
Yeah.
And like, that's good, but also it shouldn't have been a problem in the first place. And I have no idea why it was a problem in the first place or why a different device was seeing markedly better results than I'm now more in line with. And that's what I'm talking about when I say it's difficult to recommend the Pixel experience. It's just, you don't know what you're going to get.
But I also think like everybody's got a story. I mean, everybody listening to this podcast for sure has a story about the Nexus lineup, right? Like we have an article on the history of the Nexus phones and like you go back to the Nexus 1, the Nexus S, the Galaxy Nexus, the Nexus 4, the Nexus 5, the Nexus 6. Like almost nobody bought the Nexus 6.
I had a Nexus
6. It was enormous.
I know ZKD is very excited to write about the Nexus 6 later this year for its anniversary.
I mean, the story of the Nexus 6 is more interesting than the phone itself, but
yeah,
that's still like a fascinating device. And then the 5X and the 6P, they were mistakes, but they heralded the beginning of the Pixel. And just in and of itself, that's really fascinating.
Yeah.
I would love to, I mean, I don't want to assign you work on the podcast, but like, I would love to read a definitive account of like the last years of the Nexus, like what happened with the 5X and 6P. Why were there two phones? What happened with Huawei? Like, there's so much. Like, I know LG was supposed to make both phones at some point,
right,
and they didn't. And then Huawei won the bidding for the bigger one. And like, there was just a lot of drama. And this was when Huawei was trying to grow in North America and it had its own sort of goals for this market. And like, it was just a really interesting time. And then obviously the next year, the first Pixel launched and the narrative changed quite dramatically away from like developers and enthusiasts and towards like the more mainstream. But here we are with the, you know, Pixel 9 coming out. And I think that through line is still there, right? It's still there from, when did the Nexus 1 come out? 2010. So it's, it's been like 14 years. I know like MKBHD did this video on, he was reviewing every Galaxy ever made.
Yeah.
And like the early years of the Galaxy lineup was so chaotic, just the most chaotic ever. And Samsung made phones for different carriers with different designs and blah, blah, blah. And like
Captivate or I can't remember other ones, but the S2 had like 20 names.
Yeah, it was the Captivate, the Fascinate.
Yes.
There was just so many Galaxy S2 variants. I think there was a different one for every single carrier.
There was. Sprint, T-Mobile, Verizon, and AT&T all had different named models for it. It's just impossible. It's why we can't remember them now. It was impossible to keep. We do have to say this. The Sprint variant of the Galaxy S2 was originally released as the Galaxy S2 Epic 4G Touch.
Epic 4G Touch. Yes, thank you. How could you forget such a distinctive name?
Oh, man.
Okay, that's all we need to say about this. I just think, like, every time we get into the weeds on, like, older Android phones, it reminds me how uninteresting the current market is and why we keep talking about the Pixel, because it's really the only one that's still interesting for so many reasons. That said, we should probably, let's use this as to talk about Gemini Nano coming to the Pixel 8.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that lends itself nicely to what the hell is going on in Pixel land, because this is something that only a few weeks ago Google said was not going to happen.
Yeah, so I mean, this is genuinely breaking news as we record this. It obviously won't be when this goes live, but my news post on this went up 2 minutes ago. So we don't have a lot of details as we're recording this, because Google's releasing a podcast timed to this news that will go in a little deeper on the technical side, I hope, as to why and how they're doing this. And obviously we're recording a podcast, so I can't go listen to it. But yeah, basically, I mean, Gemini Nano, Google's on-device LLM, is coming to the Pixel 8. It was this month, like March, when they said it wasn't, in an episode of the Android Show. So like, this is a pretty quick reversal. I think that news was 3 weeks ago, basically. The running theory was that it had to do with the shortage of RAM on the Pixel 8, which only has 8 gigabytes of RAM as opposed to 12 gigabytes on the Pixel 8 Pro. And I would say, based on the statement they gave me, which I'll read part of, running large language models on phones with different memory specs can deliver different user experiences. So we have been testing and validating this on the Pixel 8. We're excited to provide the opportunity for more enthusiasts and developers to try out Gemini Nano, where we hope to get more feedback and see more innovation. So, I mean, that's about as much of a confirmation on it being a memory issue as I think we'll get. Which is, again, weird, and why it's not super surprising to see this, because the S24 series supports Gemini Nano, and the smallest S24 runs on 8 gigabytes of RAM. So it's not the first time this LLM has come to a phone with that amount of memory. That's kind of all I have to go off right now. Again, I'm hoping we by the time this comes out, we'll know more. But yeah, it's going to support recorders, auto summaries, and Smart Reply and Gboard to start. That's how the Pixel 8 Pro was, and it will be a developer preview. I assume that this is basically how it was on the Pixel 8 Pro, where you had to go into developer settings and enable AI Core. I assume that's what they mean. We will try it out once it rolls out. It is coming as part of the June feature drop, so it's going to be a minute until we actually get to try it on the Pixel 8. We should see a new QPR beta next week. I asked Google if it was going to be in that QPR beta drop, and they didn't get back to me. So again, hopefully this comes out sooner rather than later, but at the very least, the June feature drop will have this for Pixel 8 users.
I don't have much to say about this beyond, I really want to give Google the benefit of the doubt here that it wasn't doing it in order to make the more expensive phone more attractive, that it was not doing this to market Gemini Nano alongside the Pixel 8 Pro as a differentiator, and rather it did a lot of internal testing and found that for whatever reason, the experience of using Gemini Nano on the Pixel 8 was not good enough, and that it wasn't okay shipping a product that wasn't going to live up to its internal standards, right? That is the best case scenario here. And then through multiple months and rounds of iteration, Google found a way to optimize it enough. Maybe they shrunk it even further with whatever means that they can do that. And then now Pixel 8 works great with Gemini Nano in specific circumstances, right? This does speak to this interplay between feature, like Google's Pixel team and its Android team, and now its AI team, this sort of interplay that they've always had, where the Pixel team wants the best Android features for itself and Android wants to release a whole bunch of features and make them available to all OEMs. And now there's the separate Gemini team that has all of these other things that it's working with OEMs to implement. And then the Pixel team is just yet another OEM client that it can cater to, but there's no money exchanging hands. I think that's the interesting part here, is now that there's this extra like silo within Google that the Pixel team has to work with on implementation. And as we have learned many times over the years, there's not a lot of coordination between those teams. So when it goes badly, it goes very badly. And I just really hope that this is Google playing it safe. There's no like cynical reason for them having not released it earlier. Or like, would they not have released it if there wasn't a big stink about it made by people like us?
My read on it kind of mixes yours with the more cynical take, which is that I don't think Google was keeping Gemini Nano off the Pixel 8 to push people to the Pixel 8 Pro. I think you're right. I think everything you said about optimization is correct. I also think that Google did other things this cycle to push people to the Pixel 8 Pro. I think this is not an example of that, but I think there are other AI features that don't run on device that could have come to the Pixel 8 and didn't to push people to the 8 Pro.
Yeah, I will agree with that. But again, like there's that, it's just hard to know whether it's the interplay between those divisions at work, right? It's like, who's in charge here? Who gets to say, because if Rick Osterloh was like, that he went to the head of Gemini or DeepMind or whatever the team is now in charge of iterating on Gemini, he's like, look, we have to get Gemini Nano working on the Pixel 8 because it's going to be a PR nightmare for us. And they're like, literally, Rick, right now, we can't because it will slow down the phone in every other way. And he's like, okay. And then what I would love to know is what happens. Does he go to Sundar and he's like, Sundar, go tell DeepMind to make this work on the Pixel 8 because otherwise I'm going to be in deep shit. And then Sundar's like, all right, you have 3 months to get this figured out. I'm just fascinated by this interplay. And as a manager, I'm always working with people to try to like find compromises. And that's one of the best parts of my job, but it's also one of the most stressful because you're trying to please as many people as you can, both internally while also putting out a good product. And I know for a fact that the number of people that understand this announcement is probably in the thousands, you know, like most people don't give a shit that the Pixel 8 wasn't running the Gemini Nano core on its phone, right? It just does not matter to their lives whatsoever. But the fact that they are doing it and they're releasing it as part of like a podcast, it just speaks to the fact that like Google understands its audience for the Pixel. And it goes back to what we were talking about, but how a lot of these legacy Nexus users are still today the loyal core Pixel users that make up so much of like the energy surrounding a Pixel release.
Yeah, I agree.
So let's talk a bit about this Disney plus Hulu merger thing. This does not affect me whatsoever because I'm in Canada where there's always been Star.
Yeah.
And it's just been a Star icon on my Disney plus screen. And that's where everything that is Hulu goes. Yeah. But tell us about this change.
Yeah. I mean, this has been in beta testing for a while. I'm sure this is where we're headed more or less eventually, although not anytime soon, because there are Hulu restrictions that are going to force Disney to keep this app in place for the foreseeable future, such as live TV. But yeah, I mean, basically, Hulu is now a tab in the Disney plus app. And I'm ecstatic about it because I have found that Hulu's app has gotten much worse over the last year or two. It is probably one of the more used apps in my house right now, purely because there's a couple shows on it that actually run on like network television that we are watching in addition to finishing up our and I hate to summon this because I'm just gonna make Daniel mad, but finishing our Lost rewatch.
Oh god, rewatch.
I mean rewatch for me. We are 5 episodes from the end. It's great. Show rules. I can't wait to come on next week and tell Daniel how wrong he is and that the finale holds up 100%.
It's going to so be disappointed awesome. In you.
I will say I forgot about the temple stuff at the beginning of season 6, and that is a bit of a drag. Not the show's best effort. Did forget about that stuff. No, but like I've had a lot of technical issues with Hulu in general where the app will just not play episodes. It will crash randomly, it will blare ads at me. Like, the ads will be noticeably like 20-25% louder than the episode that I'm watching. And I, like, last night tried out the stuff, like all the stuff we've been watching in Hulu on Disney Plus, and because it's a different app and it's running on different tech, The Verge had a really good write-up on how much work it took to bring Hulu content into Disney Plus. I didn't have any of those issues. It just seems like everything's working normally. You still get, I'm on a Hulu with ads plan, so I still get ads on the Hulu content, but like, it didn't crash. The ads were the normal volume. Like, I'm just happy to see that I can use a better app than whatever Hulu has become, as it's been like kind of ignored by Disney on a technical level. So
I will say there is just something really nice about using the Disney Plus app.
Yeah.
Its tech stack is so much better than most of its competitors.
Yeah.
I think Netflix and Disney Plus really have the only good tech stacks in the business. Like, every other app, even Prime is bad. Prime is not good. They overhauled their Apple TV app a while back and it looks better, but it does not work better. And I think there's a big distinction there. Like, Disney Plus looks fine. It works fine. It loads quickly. It's got good bit rate. It supports 4K. It supports all the things. Like, it's just a better experience. And Netflix, I think, is still the best experience by quite a wide margin, except on mobile, because the first thing you see on Netflix when you open it now is all the games that they want you to play.
Yeah, it's like Spotify and audiobooks. It's like, not why I'm here, guys. Appreciate you trying to pivot, but not why I'm here.
I do appreciate that they have Hades now on iOS, which I haven't played yet, but I just, to me, it warms my heart that like Netflix is paying for these ports.
Yeah, that no one's playing.
But it's just like the GTA ports that came out on Netflix. I remember watching a comparison video between them and the remasters that came out last year, 2 years ago. And like, the mobile ports were so much better than the console remasters that it's just, it's cool that they take it very seriously. They want people to have a good experience. So I love Hades. Hades is still one of my like top Hades five games ever.
Hades 2 this year, I think, right? Or at least in early access this year. That'll be good.
I think it'll be early access this year, yeah. They came out, it wasn't Hades in early access for like two, three years?
I think, yeah. It was a long time.
But I also remember like when Supergiant said like the reason Hades was so good was because they left it in early access literally as long as they could.
Yeah.
Like, that made a big deal.
Yeah, absolutely. Take your time. Like, innovate and keep trying different things and get feedback from people. I mean it's similar to Baldur's Gate 3, right? Like, that game was in early access forever, or at least Act 1 was, there's a reason that seems to be the consensus pick that is the strongest part of that game, I would say. I do want to bitch about one thing on the Disney Plus side. And I'm also using an Apple TV because I've given up on the Chromecast, as I've talked about.
Good.
Can you not... I can't find a way to, like, actually fast forward in that app. Like, it makes you just hit skip 10 seconds ahead every single time.
Yeah.
Which is, I guess, fine until, and this is true, you decide to split the Eras Tour movie over two nights and it loses your progress and you were 2.5 hours into the Eras Tour movie and I had to spend genuinely 4 or 5 minutes hammering the right button on my Apple TV remote to get back to where we were.
How long is this movie?
The Eras Tour Taylor's version is like 3:45. It's a very long movie.
Oh my god.
So it wasn't great. It was genuinely a bit of a headache to do. I think the Taylor's version one is like 3.5 hours. So we had an hour to go, basically, and I had to skip ahead manually until we were at 2.5 hours.
So I'm seeing a bunch of people complaining about how Fast Forward and Rewind are not working.
Yeah.
But apparently you can set it to 2x, 3x, or 4x. But I guess maybe it's broken at the moment.
Well, we take back everything we said about Disney Plus being a good app. That app sucks.
I will say it is slightly buggy, but I also blame the Apple TV, not necessarily the app, because I find the Apple TV itself to be increasingly buggy.
Yeah, I agree.
I found that has gotten less reliable over the years. Like, I haven't changed my television or my soundbar, but I'll like lose audio to my Sonos Arc every couple of days now, and I'll have to like reboot the Apple TV. And that wasn't the case before.
Wouldn't it be great if there was a good Chromecast alternative that was running on a modern processor with like enough storage to actually use it? Wouldn't that be great?
So when NVIDIA announced Blackwell, yeah, and they were talking about how Blackwell is going to like change AI processing forever, a bunch of people in the YouTube comments were like, just give us a new Shield TV. That's really all we want. We don't need like a Blackwell level performance in our streaming box. We just need something that's not 9 years old, because objectively it's still the best Android TV based streaming box. Like, yeah, there's nothing absolutely better, and it's been almost nine years. So yeah, I mean, that's pretty sad, but I don't think that's gonna happen. NVIDIA is literally printing money right now, so it doesn't need this like dribble over here. This little like spittle of cash that Android users are going to give it.
They don't remember releasing the Shield. If you showed them a Shield TV, they would be like, do we need to sue someone for stealing our brand?
I have a confession to make. Yeah. I threw away my Shield TV. I did. I'm sorry. It's e-waste. It's a bad thing. I did it, but I'm like, I will literally never use this again.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be better than the other things that I have. It's sad. It's sad to me because it's like the controller's good. The actual like game controller is good.
Was this the Pro or the tube one?
The Pro.
The Pro. I don't know. You can get like $130 on eBay for the Pro.
No way.
You should have sold it. Yeah.
No way.
Yeah, they're selling for like $130, $150.
Are you serious?
I'm looking at eBay right now, and that's American dollars. That's like $8,000 Canadian.
Maybe I didn't throw it away. Maybe I just put it in a bag somewhere in my garage. I hope I did. It. I think I did. No, I did. I didn't throw it away. Now that I'm thinking about it, it's in my garage. I will go put it on eBay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm not a bad person, I promise. Okay, so there's a couple of news stories that I wanted to mention before we go. One is interesting in light of all the AI talk that we've been having over the last few months. There's a report out of a think tank in the UK called the IPPR. This is kind of a progressive think tank. It's left-leaning, so it obviously like has an agenda. I mean, I'm going to admit that up front. It's very pro-union, pro-worker. If you're not left-leaning and progressive, don't tune out. There's a point to this. But they're talking about how AI is going to, quote, transform the job market. And this is specifically for the UK. But what it's talking about in this report is how a lot of people will be impacted by AI in ways that they may not realize unless there's some government regulation and intervention. And a lot of governments, including the UK and in the US and Canada, are putting money into researching how AI will impact the job market, right? There's millions of dollars already invested, but there hasn't been any substantive regulation to prevent the proliferation of AI to disrupt job markets in favor of employers, right? Or in favor of the creators of the AI tools. And I think with Sam Altman and many of the other CEOs coming out and basically saying like unchecked AI research and unchecked AI development is ultimately a net bad, we still think that like we have to move forward with this technology to see where we can go and eventually reach general AI levels of autonomy. This is saying that a lot of people, especially marginalized people, women, young people, people in data entry jobs, they are going to be heavily disrupted by AI if no intervention is made, and that in the next couple of years, 11% of the job market might be disrupted. But if in the second phase, in 4 or 5 years, if there's no intervention by the government, up to 60% of all jobs in the UK will be impacted, not necessarily lost, but impacted in some way by AI, right? By the automation, the reliance on AI to do tasks that humans were otherwise doing. And this isn't some like cry into the clouds about like, oh, like computers are going to take our jobs, right? This is very much a, we know what happened previously with manufacturing automation. We know previously with the disruption of white collar work when we transitioned to computers. We've seen how the market will adapt. And we're not saying that people are just going to lose their jobs overnight, but that there is a tendency, especially with the consolidation of a lot of the larger data analysis entry industries, right? A lot of these industries are being run by fewer and fewer companies. That consolidation of power gives them leverage when it comes to workers' rights. And in the interest of like higher share prices and profitability, companies will tend to go where they can squeeze out every last dollar. And that will impact people because jobs will get lost. And if there's no retraining or if there's no intervention around helping people use AI in their jobs to make them more productive and in turn increase GDP, it will just have a net negative effect and wipe out a whole bunch of jobs that will then just be automated and likely make other people's lives worse. So customer service, data entry, right? If you're relying, if you hate calling your phone company and it doesn't let you talk to somebody because it wants to do everything via the chat bot or via the audio bot, this is just the next level of that, where like there will be no people on the other end of the phone. And yeah, I think it's interesting. There's a chart in here that estimates how much of a specific industry will be exposed to AI in the next 5 years. Secretarial and related occupations is the top one, as well as administrative and customer service. Those are in like the 80 to 100% range for AI exposure, which is really fascinating. Because when you think about those businesses, right, you think about people just kind of, there's a lot of data entry, there's a lot of busy work, a lot of filing, customer service in particular. I mean, we've seen companies like Wendy's replacing humans with AI-based kiosks and stuff. And then there's more rote work, science, engineering, and tech associates. So like people that are doing the research and the busy work for the quote scientists and professionals, those are also going to get impacted. Sales, right? If you can just choose to talk to an AI to sell your house or negotiate a mortgage or whatever, you're going to do that. And it keeps going down and down and down. But like this sort of basic cognitive workload will inevitably be disrupted. And like, I don't think that it'll be the worst case scenario. They talk about how the worst case scenario will impact 8 million jobs. The best case scenario is that no jobs are impacted and that the GDP rises because the existing workforce becomes more productive. But I do think it's just a fascinating look at, this is the first time I've seen a really deep dive into how AI will necessarily impact the job market in a way that is very straightforward to understand, right? So we'll link it in the show notes. It gives a bunch of examples. I know you have a good one, but
I don't know if it's good.
It's not good. It's bad, but it's an analogy. But I just, there's an example here. Back in 2023, the U.S. National Eating Disorder Association replaced its live phone call service where you could call and like talk to somebody. It's like kids help phone, that kind of thing, with a chatbot. And the chatbot was powered by an AI health company. So it takes an existing LLM and it sort of optimizes it for a specific purpose. But the guardrails weren't good enough on it. And a bunch of times the people that ended up using it were given dieting advice. Like that's a very kind of obvious story about how this can go off the rails, right? You don't want to give a person who's struggling with an eating disorder advice on what they should be eating. But it also just speaks to the fact that when you take humans out of the mix, you take empathy out of the mix, you take care out of the mix, you take customization out of the mix. And I think more and more of these companies are going to be pressured to make decisions like this. And we're not going to hear about all of them because some of them will just be bad experiences rather than dangerous, but it's concerning nonetheless. What was your analogy, by the way?
Well, okay, so the other example I had was the Air Canada story from about a month ago, where in 2022, a chatbot told a passenger that he could buy a full fare flight for a funeral and then apply for a bereavement fare after the fact. I'm reading from the BBC right now. And basically, Air Canada was like, no, that's not right. And he was like, but you told me that that was correct. And they were like, well, that was the chatbot. It doesn't know what it's talking about. And so he went through a resolution tribunal. He was literally just awarded the fees for tribunal as well as the price that he had paid for the airfare, right? Like, he got the equivalent of 812. I guess it was, this must be Canadian dollars. So $812. So that's another example of, and as you said before we were recording in the pre-show, like, that is how airlines and other places using AI customer service is going to build into their terms of service that, like, nothing the chatbot says actually means anything, which is, like, will fundamentally break customer service, but that is neither here nor there. My analogy, which is probably bad and I haven't put much thought into it, and this is, you know, 10, 15 years off, I think, is where we're at. But self-checkout has been around has been widespread, I guess, for, what, 15 years now, 20 years now, maybe even, but certainly 15 years, I would say. I don't know how this is in Canada, but at least in the US, Target is, like, widely rolling back its self-checkout. It's limiting most of its kiosks to 10 items or less. It's also closing them at night, like after 7 p.m. It goes down. They fully shut down self-checkout and you have to go through an actual register. It's not the only store to have done that. Like, self-checkout seems to be weirdly dying and they're pushing people towards either regular checkout, although not staffed with any additional workers. So you end up with super long lines for one or two registers, or you have to buy and then pick it up through the app or whatever, which is really what they want you to do. And I should say that that movement is largely, almost certainly, to do with trying to minimize theft. My analogy is that this will be like self-checkout, where I think we will go through a decade plus of pivoting to AI, replacing humans with AI in the same way that you replaced humans at checkout with kiosks that you used yourself. And then companies will realize that it was a bad decision, that it doesn't work as well as they were hoping, that there are lots of problems with replacing humans, even as AI gets more advanced, right? And that we'll see some kind of at least hybrid model, but it will be a lot of pain before we ever get to the concept that we should already be at, which is that AI should always just be optimizing jobs and not replacing them. That is my not very well thought out analogy that I had while we were talking about this in the pre-show.
I think it's inevitable that companies will replace people with automation. That's been happening forever.
Right,
it's only going to get more pervasive. The issue is, you know, as you said, like, when we get to the point where there's nobody on the other end of the line,
right,
then we're fucked. Like, then we're facing an issue where you basically just have to try to get what you need from a computer. And this is already true of, like, companies like Google and Amazon, right? If you have a problem with something that happens at Google, on Google or one of their services or Amazon, like, try talking to a human when you want to return something at Amazon.
Yeah.
It's basically impossible.
It's impossible.
I wanted to return something on Amazon. I needed something urgently. I bought something. I sent it. They sent it to me. I then bought the same thing again and tried to return the original one. And they wanted to charge me a return fee. And I tried to make it clear that it was their fault. And I tried to talk to somebody. I tried to use the live chat. I couldn't get through. I was like, okay, I don't know what's going on here. None of the return options are allowing me to, like, make the point that they sent me the wrong color or whatever it was. So I lied and I used the return feature and I told them a different reason for wanting to return this thing. And they just gave me a refund for it. They know that this is what people need. They're willing to be lied to or scammed, and they won't give you somebody to talk to. Like, I'd prefer not to have to lie to Amazon in order to get my money back, but there was no other way to do it, or at least not do it expeditiously. And maybe that makes me the problem, but I would always prefer to be able to pick up a phone, press zero, and be like, can we talk about this? Maybe I'm old school that way, but, like, I would always prefer to do that.
And Amazon's customer service, you go back 10 years, I remember it being pretty good. I remember, like, if a package was late, even just by a day, you could just jump in the chat and they'd be like, yeah, here's a $5 credit. I did that all the time in college because for whatever reason, like every other package I got from them was late and they were just handing me $5 credits. Like, yeah, sorry about that. Here you go. It was basically paying for Prime itself. And a year or two later, I'm sure they got tired of people like me abusing it. Although, in fairness, they were late, right? So like, that's their problem. That was when they started changing the language to estimated, even for Prime delivery, like estimated delivery date. And then we're like, I mean, now it's like a package can be 5 days late and they're still like, well, give it like two more days. And if it's still not there, like you can maybe come back and maybe we'll ship you another one. Maybe stuff like that, where it's like, you're kind
of, that was their whole message. Amazon for many years was like, we put the customer before everybody.
Yes.
We will never sacrifice the customer experience. And it really doesn't feel that way anymore.
Yeah. No. I mean, Amazon, like, shopping through Amazon is kind of a terrible experience. That is, like the only way around it is to go to like Walmart for everything other than like, and even then there's stuff at like, you know, you're just choosing between big businesses. And to be honest, Amazon has stuff that you won't be able to find at a Walmart or a Best Buy or whatever. So you're out of luck anyway. It is difficult, especially if you are a tech enthusiast like we are. Like, I assume everybody listening to the show is, to not use Amazon. I'm sure it's possible, and I'm not saying it's not, but it's difficult. But yeah, I think the only way to get around how bad the customer service experience has become there is to do exactly what you just said and have to lie through getting a refund for a thing you're owed a refund on. And that sucks, but I certainly wouldn't feel bad about it. It is their own actions as a company that have brought the customers to a point where they need to lie to have a fair experience.
And I also think there's very little guilt about that. Most people don't feel guilty about lying to a multi-trillion-dollar company.
Certainly
not. Right, in order to get a $25 refund. There's very little empathy involved in dealing with a corporation. There's very little goodwill in the way that they treat their customers,
right,
as well. So that you end up with this cynical, often one-sided relationship. I mean, we talk about Google all the time. I mean, this is a completely different topic, so I don't think we want to get into it right now. But like, we talk about Google as the gateway to our jobs and how Google is and other social media companies have been instrumental in destroying the media business, right? Among other reasons, and how like our jobs are always on the line whenever Google just decides to release a new core update or a spam update or a helpful content update or whatever they call it. And they can and do make and break the viability of many, many businesses.
I mean, they broke, this is only semi-related, they broke my ability to search our site this week. From Monday to literally during this record, I would search, I guess this is behind the scenes stuff, but like if I'm trying to find previous coverage on Android Police, I have a and I think most of the editors, if not all of them, do like use this as well, just a custom like search engine, right? So it's the equivalent of typing site:androidpolice.com into my search bar every single time, but it's got a keyboard shortcut. They broke it. I don't know how. Like, it was on two of my accounts, but not a third account. In addition to some Android Police articles, it was shoving in Reddit links and Android Central forum posts and like all this stuff. And I couldn't figure out if I broke something, if it was something with my account that was causing all of this stuff to filter in that shouldn't be there. And during this record, it seems to be fixed. So definitely, I didn't change anything either time. So they just like broke my own personal search engine experience. Think about how much they change on a weekly basis that impacts the visibility of our site or other sites, right? Like it's not enough people think about how Google impacts what they're seeing on the web, but like basically everything you see at this point, if it's not through social media, is probably a thing that Google filtered to you.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. For sure. Okay. Last thing very quickly, four Canadian school boards have sued Meta, Snapchat, and TikTok for hurting students. This is the latest in a series of lawsuits that have launched all over the world. There are over 500 of them in progress in the US, both at the school board level, the county level, and the state level. And it's interesting to me how, you know, as a parent, I see my own behavior using phones around my kid. I see my kid's obsession with my phone and my own sort of inexorable inevitability of them eventually getting a phone and then getting addicted to it. And this idea that like I only have another X number of years before I have to get my kids a smartphone. And therefore, I only have X number of years until they're addicted to a phone, because it's almost like sugar. Like you just know that they're going to become addicted to it. And then you just have to mediate that addiction over the course of their childhood. And I hate that feeling, right? I hate that feeling of like not having control over this. But I also understand the necessity of teenagers having smartphones or having a phone. Not necessarily having a smartphone, but a representative for the Toronto District School Board said, we're managing mental health challenges, loneliness and discrimination. The slurs that we're seeing people use, some of that emanates from what's on social media. We want to raise awareness and ultimately get these companies to acknowledge and make things safer. So it's a $4.5 billion lawsuit, but really, I don't think it's about the money. They're not going to get $4.5 billion. This is about raising awareness. A lot of what's happening at schools, and my wife is she's not a teacher, but she's involved in the school district here in Toronto. And she says like she hears about pranks that come from TikTok all the time. So students will just take a trending prank from TikTok, bring it into the school, and inevitably bully somebody in the process. And personally, I think schools should not allow phones at all. They should just like you get in the door, you put your phone in your locker, you are not allowed to use it until the end of the day. I know that's not realistic, but I think that's going to be a lot better. This week alone, Florida banned people under the age of 14 from going on social media, from signing up for social media accounts, which is interesting because I've very, very rarely agreed with anything Ron DeSantis has ever done. And yet, I don't actually think this is a bad idea. I mean, I think it's interesting, right? Because it's like, you know, this is the free speech absolutist who's telling people under the age of 14 that they can't sign up for social media. But at the same time, from a mental health perspective, I actually think it's a good thing. But then again, like 14 years old, you just know that the second they turn 14, they're going to sign up. They're probably going to find a way to sign up sooner. It's just messy, right? Kids will always find a way to do what they're not allowed to do.
Yeah, I really don't. I mean, the issue with these bills, beyond the concept of does it violate free speech or not, is the third party verification stuff just like sucks, man. Like it really, the idea of having to, you know, if I lived in Florida, hand over ID and credit card information to sign up for Facebook to a third party verification system like sucks. And it's not the only state that's done that, right? I mean, like Texas has done the same thing with pornography. It's not a new concept, but I wish there was a different way that wasn't, because I agree with you that I like the idea of putting these restrictions in place, like free speech or otherwise, but I do not like the idea of relying on third-party verification systems that no doubt will be breached at some point. There's no, like, one of them will be breached.
Of course.
Certainly.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a weird, it's a weird and difficult place to be, right? Because you're mediating people's use of these free and open platforms. And I don't think the intention is bad in this case. It is meant to protect children. But I agree that the onus should be on the platforms to do a better job protecting children. And I think a lot of these platforms, they have a vested interest in getting kids addicted to them as soon as possible. They can say they want to mediate usage all they want, but they don't make it particularly difficult to sign up. I also find it interesting that like Google is not part of this lawsuit because YouTube is such a pervasive problem and like the content on YouTube is so pervasive, but it's like Snapchat, I don't think is really a problem here. Like a lot of kids use Snapchat, but it's not a social network in the same way. So it's difficult to compare it to something like YouTube or to TikTok. And I'm surprised that YouTube is not being named in here because TikTok is far more like YouTube than it is like Snapchat. Snapchat is a messaging app. It's not a content hosting platform. It has like Discover, but like, I don't think that's what is going on here.
Yeah, the closest thing is Stories. And even then it's, you know, you're still just sharing with the circle you already have.
Exactly. Yeah. And I don't think that's, I think obviously people are sharing, like, I'm sure it comes from the behavior that a lot of schools are seeing, but if you want to ban Snapchat, then you should probably like talk about banning WhatsApp or iMessage, because it's visual, but it's really a messaging app, and you can't compare it to a content hosting platform in the same way. So yeah, I'm very surprised that YouTube is not mentioned in this lawsuit. But yeah, we will see what comes out of it.
Yeah.
All right, final thing. I know you wanted to talk about this.
I mean,
the Vision Pro
has
finally received a discount.
Yeah, I just want to joke about it. The Vision Pro is available on Woot right now. It's 6% off. You're saving $200. I just think it's funny. I this whole page looks so low rent. I think Woot is like, for a company owned by Amazon, like the ugliest fucking website. It genuinely, if you look at the listing, it's got these big this big lettering that says special Prime Appreciation Days pricing with 3 exclamation points that makes it look like a scam. But moreover, mm-hmm. I just think it's funny that the Vision Pro is already on Woot. I don't think it really says anything about this headset, especially because as I noticed right before we started talking about it, it is only on the small model. So I guess it's just only people with big heads are buying the Vision Pro, as I think the takeaway that I'm getting from this now. But if you wanted to poke fun at Apple and poke fun at the Vision Pro, it's been out for a month now, month and a half now, and it's on Woot.
Yeah.
You can read into that what you will.
I mean, I can certainly read into it that the people that have bought the Vision Pro have bought the Vision Pro. And a lot of them are returning them.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that is what it is. But one thing we didn't mention was that Apple announced the dates for WWDC this year. And what did they say? It's going to be, quote, absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
Capital I.
So sweaty. I'm sorry.
So sweaty. Just the most like obviously Apple thing. I am very, very excited. There were like a bunch of breathless reports this week about how iOS 18 will finally let you like move icons around to where you want them on the home screen.
Oh my God. Yeah.
It's the most hilarious thing I've ever seen.
It's going to break the clean interface that iOS has built. You say, as you show me a page filled with random icons and widgets that has no aesthetic cohesion whatsoever. Yeah, guys, it's where it's the end times for iOS. I find it funny because, you know, this rumor comes on the heels of Apple's defense to the DOJ being the DOJ just wants to make every iPhone into an Android phone. Meanwhile, yes, we will finally match Android's ability to move icons wherever you want them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're basically the same at this point.
So. They are basically the same at this point. I don't like Apple's defense is so dumb because they are basically the same at this point.
Okay, that's it. I'm sure Jules will make this half an hour less than.
Yeah, we should say unedited version of this podcast was actually 3 hours and 45, 3 and a half hours. Let's say same as Eras Tour.
Last week's show, I think Jules got down to what was it like 50 minutes?
Yeah, I mean,
I know we recorded for at least 1 hour and 5 minutes, so you know, doing God's work here.
God bless.
All right, that's it. That's the show. Will, thank you. Have a great long weekend. I hope you enjoy
too,
it.
Yeah.
Hopefully you get a lot of use out of the Gemini Nano model on your Pixel 8.
Not yet. Really. June feature drop.
Oh, June. It's not coming out till June.
Yeah, we got a ways to go.
That's
I'll use it on my Pro. Fine.
Okay. Enjoy it. I hope it's good weather for you as well. I hope everybody listening has a great long weekend. And happy Easter if you're celebrating. Yeah, thanks for listening. Send us some email, podcast@androidpolice.com. Thank you to everybody who sent in their Apple lawsuit hot takes. there were quite a few. maybe I should read some of them on a show next week. So next week is our 100th episode.
Oh, shit. Yeah, it
is. So we're probably not going to do anything special for it because we're very, very busy. But yeah. We'll see what we can do.
Jump ahead of things, but in 2 weeks after that, we'll be in person together. We can do
something. That's true.
That. Maybe that'll be that'll be the time to celebrate. It'll be 102, but it'll be close enough.
Yeah. All right. We'll see what we can do. Okay. That's it. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you very soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.